Hi, and welcome to the Vancouver Life Podcast.
This podcast is created to answer the most talked about questions when it comes to navigating the Vancouver real estate market.
I'm your host, Dan Wortel, a licensed agent and accredited real estate investment advisor based here in Vancouver, and I'm joined by my co-host, Ryan Dash.
Hi, Dan. I'm also a local realtor, an exhausted father of two, husband of one, and really happy to be here.
Let's get right into today's episode. When it comes to real estate, the condo market is definitely feeling the most pressure right now. With inventory in that segment definitely rising the fastest, we're seeing the sales to active listings ratio drop the furthest, putting it into a buyer's market in areas like Toronto. Plus, all those investment condos out there, ouch, their cash flows are hitting just terrifying numbers of negative cash flow lows. So, are condos nearing the bottom, or is the worst yet to come? We explore this question. Plus, this week, we are getting into what's happening with consumer confidence, the GDP, population growth, and the ever important state of the mortgage market. And quick update before we get into this week's details. Well, Ryan and I, we run a successful real estate team here in Vancouver.
We've got some big news. We're actually looking to expand, and we're looking to add realtors to our team.
Agents that are going to join us, well, they get access to the same systems, leads, coaching, and accountability that has made our existing team so successful.
So if you know a realtor who would benefit by joining our top-tiered team, then please go to thevancouverlife.com/join to connect with us.
Perfect. All right. So let's get into what is important and what is happening this week in the real estate market. Number one is consumer confidence. And of course, this relates to what people are feeling overall and if they are ultimately feel like spending money or holding back. And we track this, of course, because when the consumer confidence metric drops, well, households, essentially, they just pull back on their spending and also business investments pull back too. It's a real indicator, if you will, of the financial health of the overall marketplace. It's kind of like the wealth effect. You know, if you remember a couple of years ago when prices were ripping higher, people felt wealthier, they were spending a lot more. And of course, the exact opposite happens when prices drop, interest rates go up, people feel less wealthy, so they spend less. And this is on everything, of course, from mostly luxury items like trips or luxury cars, jewelry, that kind of thing, but obviously also has a big thing to do with those extra large purchases, aka a new home. Well, the confidence index fell further in September, and it fell quite a bit, and it's currently sitting right now at almost the lows of the pandemic. So it obviously dropped off a cliff there chart-wise in the depths of the pandemic, aka around March, April of 2020. Well, guess what? The overall sentiment in consumer confidence is back to around those depths as well, which also emulate the consumer confidence we saw back at the global financial crisis. And we reference those two time points so much lately, but again, that's just because they're the most recent and the most similar to what we're experiencing today in the marketplace. This level, this depth of consumer confidence is also a very solid indicator we are in or about to be in a recession, because this chart also tracks what happens with recessions, and we're basically tracking along the same percentage base here. Now, there was one quote that we pulled here where it read, "Respondents see this as a bad time for a major purchase." That metric hit 70%, which is high, right? So you've got 7 out of 10 people saying, no, I'm definitely not considering a major purchase right now, which is very indicated here when we look at the volume of real estate sales nationally, but also here in Vancouver. And this level of pessimism, it's definitely felt in the business community as well, where the business sentiment is also sitting around a 14-year low, going back to, again, the global financial crisis and, of course, COVID shutdowns here. Companies that were polled for the consumer and business confidence metric here, they view the next 12 months, their businesses will be worse off than they are today. So big indicator of how they're going to be operating their businesses. People don't typically hire when they think that things are going downhill. But that's kind of your outlook this week on where things are in consumer and business confidence levels.
Yeah, they certainly don't look to expand. In fact, they go away from thriving and they go into a survival mode. And I think that can be echoed by looking at the per capita GDP numbers too, because we're starting to see those fall, right? So, and depending on you know, the different basket of measures that you look at, it's very possible that we're already in one, that being a recession, right? So considering last week's GDP report, which showed effectively no growth throughout July, and a modest 0.1% uptick in August, which really doesn't account for much, you know, especially when you're given that the population growth is currently running at 0.3% per month, we're seeing real per capita GDP fall, right? It's continuing to contract. Outside of the pandemic, it's now falling at the fastest rate since the financial crisis. This is important, as per capita shows the total output of the country divided by the output of its individuals, right? So this matters because it's really a good look at the state of the middle class, which really is the vast majority of people who buy and sell homes. And so to kind of give you guys some perspective here about why it's important to look at the per capita GDP, if you look at, say, China, for example, they're the second largest GDP in the world, sitting at about 18 trillion, right? So you would think, just by looking at a top level, that that means their economy is going really well. But when you break it down per capita, it's actually about $12,000 per citizen. And that sits there, that puts their economy at about 60th place in the world. So that means that there's very few people at the top who have a load of money, and a lot of people at the bottom that have very little money. The US, by comparison, for example, sits at 25 trillion, right? That's the number one highest economy or biggest economy in the world. And when you break it down per capita, they actually sit at number nine, somewhere at about $76,000 per citizen, right? So a much, much healthier middle class, a far more productive economy in that respect. And where does Canada sit relative to all of this? Well, we have the eighth largest economy in the world at 2.2 trillion. And we sit number 20 in terms of real GDP per capita. However, that number is falling, which is showing the erosion of the middle class and the wealth divide that Dan kind of mentioned at the start here. So some very interesting things happening. And of course, it will continue to dilute as our population increases and more of that middle class gets diluted.
Yeah, it's been largely discussed, argued even, that Canada's GDP has been hugely masked by the fact that the population growth has been so aggressive these last couple of years. Of course, with more people in the country, they're spending more, they're working more, GDP appears healthy. But that's why you have to look at the per capita GDP, which has just been broken down so eloquently by Ryan. But let's have a look here further at what's happening with population growth. And guess what? No surprise, Q3 data is in, and it is yet another record. So we've seen year over year population growth hit just under 1.2 million people. And this is after the previous quarter, which was recently revised sharply lower. So of course, they go back and they readjust these things, more data flows in, and they adjusted the data, the amount down by about 150,000 people. That's not a small miss. We're talking over 10% here was their adjustment. Now, what's funny here is CBC had also done a report recently which stated that they believe Canada is undercounting their temporary residents to the tune of about 1 million people. This is something we touched on a few podcasts ago, but again, it really shows that not too many people really know how to count the population in our country. And even Stats Can did not argue or even dispute CIBC's findings. So who knows the right number? Well, not the people who are in charge of counting it. But regardless, let's say we're at least in the wheelhouse here. So let's dig a bit deeper here into this number that just came out here. So in the last quarter, we saw another record happen of 240,000 non-permanent residents admitted into Canada. And so you're like, okay, well, 250K or 240K, that's a record. How does that relate to long-term averages? Well, if we go back just 10 years ago, that's when it was averaging around 30,000 people per quarter. So we're over eight times that amount in the last quarter alone. Let's add them all up together, though, because this now means we have about 2.2 million non-permanent residents living in Canada. This is a whopping 46% increase over just last year. And let's think about it. That's about 5% of our entire population. And the breakdown of those non-PRs, it's about 1 million are temporary workers, 600,000 are international students, and almost 300,000 have both study and work permits. So just a colossal amount of people coming into the country now. Now, one additional point to consider here is as we enter or if we're in a recession, the longer this goes, well, that's when you're going to see these numbers reverse because obviously you don't bring in temporary workers when there's no work. So while we're currently hitting records, I do feel this number is going to peel off in the upcoming quarters as although the economy and the jobs market is still very robust, it is going to start to peel off, turn to the downside, and therefore most likely the temporary workers numbers will follow that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we just talked about real GDP per capita, right? And if the jobs aren't there and the incomes aren't there and there's, you know, the economy isn't there to help create the level of production required to sustain the level of living that, you know, is expensive in Canada, those people will go to places like the States or they'll go to other job markets or more robust economies that aren't dealing with contractions by, you know, extremely high interest rates, comparatively speaking to where they were. And again, so, you know, the thing that could curtail immigration is jobs. If the jobs go away, the immigration will also come down, just like Dan said. So to give you guys some perspective, you know, in the middle of 2022, we had, if you recall, 1 million job vacancies, right? That has now cut down to 700,000. So that's a 30% drop in demand for filling these spaces. And that's due in part largely to businesses slowing down and also forecasting about what's going to happen in the future. Instead of, you know, choosing to compete with your primary competition, you're seeing businesses that are looking to survive maybe the next sort of 2 years here, never mind how they fare against their competition. So looking at jobs in July alone, the most recent data that we have, that was a 6% drop alone, right? And so if we enter into recession, I would expect that to fall even further. Companies will go into survival mode. If they're not already there, they will look to make cuts. I mean, we've already seen TELUS, we've already seen construction companies already axe jobs to prepare for this, right? And I think more will come as real GDP continues to slow down.
So how are these jobs and GDP and the economy feeling over in Toronto? Because we're obviously based here in Vancouver, but we do like to look over to Toronto and see what's happening there because their market often emulates Vancouver's and sometimes it's 3 months ahead, sometimes behind. But either way, what can happen there can happen here. So let's have a look at what is happening in Toronto right now because they are definitely experiencing a significant slowdown. They dropped sales volume wise almost 2% last month and had almost 3.5% the month before. So Toronto has seen about a 5% slowdown in 2 months, and their sales volumes are down about 22% from those May highs. We're seeing both the condo segment and the detached segment sales volumes, they are both at 20-year lows. So understandably, when you've got low sales, that should mean a spike in inventory. And yes, there is a spike in inventory happening in Toronto. It went up a whole 11% just last month and is 44% higher than a year ago. So yes, low baseline, but still 44% is significant. When it comes to the new listings, they hit a low in the cycle of about 8,200 earlier this year, and that's new for the month. And they're now up at about 15,000 per month, new listings hitting the market there. And that's actually above your long-term averages. It's like 10% higher than long-term averages. So you can definitely expect that Toronto inventory is going to continue this trend line. And if you can believe it, the sales to new listings ratio, well, Toronto is actually in a buyer's market. And yes, it's newly into a buyer's market, but either way, Vancouver has only just entered into a balance. So a bit of a different thing, different feel of what's going on here compared to there. And as usual, I like to harp on recently, few people like to buy in a quote unquote buyer's market. So it's not a buyer's market. It's simply a less active market. So I just talked about how low the sales were, and yet we're in a buyer's market. You will never see more buyers enter a marketplace than when it is the most competitive one to be in. That's just the reality. You look at the all-time highest, quote-unquote, seller's market based on that ratio, and there were more buyers in the marketplace than ever. And here is Toronto deep into a buyer's market, and the buyers are like, nope, not for me. Regardless, let's move on. So inventory is rising, and it's actually closing in on decade highs. So if you're in Toronto and you've been looking for a home, well, you've got more to choose from than you've had in about 10 years. And when we talk about the condo market getting absolutely crushed right now, well, those listings are up 50% year over year. Just a massive amount of condos to choose from compared to a year ago. And yes, with all of this change, the market is dropping price-wise. So prices overall in Toronto did drop last month and the month before. So Toronto, just like Vancouver, has seen 2 months of property price declines in a row here. They are down almost 1% month over month, it's actually 0.8% precisely, which is the largest decline in HPI price Toronto has experienced since January. So obviously a very big shift happening in that marketplace. And when we look to those investors that are either own condos or considering buying a condo, well, the negative cash flows, if you were to buy your average price home in or condo in Toronto, get an 80% loan to value mortgage at today's rate and get today's rental rate, you would be cash negative about $1,375 per month. Not a very sexy investment. And obviously part of the reason that more of these condos are hitting the marketplace. And again, because I like to give more broad and more open picture references, investors that were buying these same condos were cash positive up until about 2019. It was in late 2019, that the cash flow metric hit zero and then started to drop. So it's been dropping for about four and a half years now. And obviously, if you're sitting there and you're holding an asset that's losing money every month, hey, you might want to offload it. And this is also part of why we're seeing such a high inventory level in Toronto anyway for the condo market. Will that happen here? That's the question. Is Vancouver to follow here? I mean, today, no. Like condo active listings is sitting at like a five-year average, and it's actually 40% lower, 40% fewer condos on the market in Vancouver than there was in 2020. And the last segment I want to touch on for Toronto here is the under construction inventory is dropping and dropping quick. Okay. So we've seen this number just have a almost rocket ship incline for about 14 years here. But of course, it is now kind of crested and is dropping off. So August saw about a 4% decline, which is the largest decline in that metric dating back to 2015. And the under construction counts have been on, again, that incline since 2016. And then that was the last dip. But if you pull back and you look at the whole chart, it's like, again, massive to the upside. But regardless, the fact that it's seen its first shift since 2015, 2016, this is a potential huge sign of things to come. Because as we know, the building permits are not being applied for right now. They're 20-year lows. So if properties are completing, and no new ones are coming behind that, well, this metric is obviously setting up for further housing shortages down the road. And hey, in Vancouver, we're seeing a similar trend here because that metric dropped 1.2% in September, led by a 2.4% decline in the condo segments. So big shifts are happening here, and that's kind of your overview of Toronto.
You know, it's crazy, Dan, when I think there's been several podcasts over the last few years where we've talked about how cycles are becoming shorter and shorter and more volatile. And I think, you know, it seems like all the adults in the room can't get together to decide on what the best path forward is. And it just seems like a big playground of who benefits the most, right? And it's interesting when you look at that stat that you said where negative cash flows hit a new low of $1,375 per month, you know, and you look back at 2019 as to when they had parity, you know, is it going to be another 4 years before we see parity or is it going to be longer? Will it be shorter and more volatile? How are those things going to come back? Because if we don't continue to build during this time, prices don't stabilize, we're going to go back towards another cycle that'll be even more violent than the one we're going through now. So I just, at what point are we going to continue to deal with the situation on a much broader perspective where, you know, stability seems to be a thing of the past, which is sad. But I guess when you bring in levels of population like you have, and then you lose count, then you can't figure out what to do next. So it's been kind of run amok, and I think we're dealing with some of that now. And looking at the Calgary market too, because this has been the beacon of affordability in Canadian real estate for some time. And it has also been the star performer, if you will, for most of 2023. However, you know, it's a tough month in Canadian housing when Calgary, probably one of the hottest, if not the hottest market in the country, is starting to see substantial pullback in demand, right? So sales fell 7% in September, right? Month over month. Even still, sales overall set a record for the month and were up nearly 30% compared to this time last year. So still some significant swings in the positive side for Calgary, for sellers. Condos continue to drive the year-over-year sale gains. And while that's also true in Edmonton, that segment saw a 60% increase in demand relative to its 2022 levels. And I guess it kind of begins to beg this question. If you've got investors who were in Ontario and in Toronto, and they're recognizing that their negative cash flow by, you know, $1,300, $1,400 a month on average, are they going to Calgary where they can get much better cash flows, much better balance on their investment? Now, you know, the equity growth side of things has been depressed for some time in Alberta. But again, with such a low baseline, it's got a lot of room to accelerate and continue to drive towards those national averages, right? So new listings in Calgary were up 1.1% in September, but up 21% year over year. So inventory is still at rock bottom levels there. Inventory in the resale market remains very thin in both Calgary and Edmonton. It's down 24% month over month and down 16% year over year. So, you know, both are at near decade lows. And this dynamic is a major contributor to pushing the prices, which have been, like I said, depressed for so long. Calgary prices are up almost 9% year over year, right? Calgary is still trading, comparatively speaking, to the national average, down 27%. So like I said, a long way to go for appreciation just to hit national averages. Edmonton, however, is still having a bit of a harder time gaining traction. However, it's seen 5 months of upward trajectory, so we'll see how that continues.
So let's have a quick chat here about the mortgage market, because that's one that, of course, all the banks and every homeowner is paying very close attention to. For the arrears part of that marketplace, well, the data is still only up until the end of August, so obviously that hasn't moved. It's near all-time lows at 0.15, with British Columbia being even lower of arrears rate at 0.12. We'll see when the September data comes up, and that will likely tick up, but only slightly would be my guess. But of course, a lot of the banks and the economists, they poll people and they say, okay, well, you know, what's your household situation? How's your mortgage doing? Are you making the payments? And are you thinking about selling just to get out of these payments? And right now, that the share of mortgage owners considering a sale, not forced to sell, they're considering a sale because they can't afford their mortgage, it did jump from 2% a year ago all the way up to 7% today. Still, to me, that's obviously almost a threefold jump, but at the end, there's more so. But 7% considering, to me, still feels very low. It's not that they're under pressure, it's not that they're uncomfortable, but it's that they're only 7% that are even considering selling. So going from considering to selling is not a huge jump, but again, they're not there today. And we see that especially in Vancouver with the continued relatively low inventory. Yes, it is a bit different in Toronto, like we just touched on. And we do expect that 7% number to likely increase over time as these elevated rates remain in place. So let's talk about renewals a bit here, because they're starting to come into play where people that are renewing today, you know, they had mortgage rates that were about 2-4% when they originally got their mortgage, and they're renewing here at like 6.5-7%. So if we look at like today's market up until about the middle of next year, there's around 70,000 mortgages renewed every single month. Now, a lot of these people Myself and I think Ryan included, we bought houses, in 2020, 21, when rates were incredibly low and you could get something pretty substantial for your money. So a lot of people took the advice of our governor, Bank of Canada here, and they bought those houses thinking rates were going to be low forever. Anyways, the amount of people that are renewing when we look at like August of 2024 and then the year forward into July of 2025, it increases to about 105,000 people every single month have their mortgages up for renewal. So that's kind of where I think a lot of the banks are paying attention to as well, because they see that sort of renewal cliff, if you will, coming their way. And sure, they're either preparing for it in their ways. Each bank's going to do something different. But obviously, a lot of people are also placing some bets here that the Bank of Canada ideally comes down a few basis points between now and then so that the renewal isn't as painful as it would be as if they had to renew today. Either way, more and more mortgages coming up for renewal at these rates every single day here. And the longer that the rates are elevated, the more stresses we're going to see on our real estate community, on the marketplace, and on people's consumer confidence as a whole. So that's largely it for this week. We will talk about what's coming up next in a second here, but just another quick reminder for all the realtors that are listening and watching to this episode. We here at the Vancouver Life, we do help realtors who are struggling to do the amount of deals that we know you're capable of. And we do this by implementing all the systems, leads, coaching, and accountability to make them wildly successful in a much quicker amount of time than if they were doing it alone. So if this is something that sounds like it might be right for you, or if you know a realtor who would benefit by joining us, well, please have them reach out to our website. All you need to do is go to thevancouverlife.com/join, and we will be happy to connect with them. Okay, last bit here. We're going to talk about what is coming up next. We had just this morning, actually, because we're recording this on October the 12th, we had the U.S. inflation data come out. Ryan, you want to touch on that a bit?
Yeah, largely unchanged. So I would say that's probably good news. U.S. inflation rate remains steady at 3.7% throughout the month of September. This defied some market expectations. But of a slight decrease to 3.6%, it's nominal. So a softer decline in energy prices offset slowing inflationary pressures in other categories. So it'll be, you know, interesting to see again how this continues to play out, especially in Canada as well. Obviously, we've got lower baseline effects this time round, and we were surprised to the upside last time. So it'll really depend what goes on here. But I think when you really start to think about, you know, the real per capita GDP that we've been talking about, as that continues to soften, I think, you know, and higher bond yields are up right now. I think that'll have an offsetting situation for the economy. And I think the Bank of Canada probably may leave things, but we'll see. It's really hard to know right now, but I would also, I kind of want to reference what Dan was just talking about here about that mortgage update where, you know, some of those renewals are coming in 25 and 26. So I think, you know, you're going to see further contraction into 2024. I think if, you know, the Bank of Canada can try and make this a little less painful for people, they will make it deeper and harder now so that when things recover or begin to recover, maybe in 25 and 26, that they can drop rates a little faster and make it a bit easier on Canadians who have to renew these mortgages at much higher rates. So we'll see.
Yeah, perfect. And again, for the next few months here, we're going to see the real estate market, especially locally here in Vancouver, really, really grind to a halt. I think like it's already slow. We saw that number obviously in September be much lower than the average sales volume. So far in October, there's only about 750 homes that have sold this month and as a whole, which means it'll wrap up ultimately around 2000 as well. So below the long-term averages. And again, not a surprise here in this tough environment with those high rates still keeping a lot of buyers on the sidelines and homeowners trapped inside their homes. So people are stuck right now. It's going to be a slow end to the year. And we also just came across a very fascinating chart that showed how much impact the Bank of Canada's rate decisions have. So the second that the rate is increased, you just see sales drop And then if you remember, a few months back, they actually paused. And that sent sales volumes straight up. I mean, like to the month, almost to the day, if you will. And then the second they started raising again, sales volumes dropped off. And that, yeah, we'll share that chart here for people watching it on YouTube. And the point of that is the next announcement, which comes on October the 25th, if that's a pause, we may see those sales activities increase. But just wait for if and when that first rate cut comes, even if it's a year from now, you can all but be guaranteed sales volumes will spike on the other side of that, because it just increases that consumer confidence metric that is also important.
Do you know, I think I'll add this at the end here. Please. One of the, I think the sad things about this whole scenario is that when you go back to, you know, the depths of the pandemic, when everybody was buying alcohol and toilet paper and you couldn't get groceries, you know, and the amount of money that was poured into the system to try and help Canadians and keep them afloat. And ultimately that may have saved a lot of lives. It may have saved a lot of economic lives too. But on the flip side, you know, now when we're ratcheting up the interest rates and we're holding them higher and longer, it's really affecting the very same people that they were trying to save. Right. And so, you know, the sad part about this is we add a ton of money, a ton of capital into the system, and then we beat up, you know, the people who didn't cause inflation. They get beat up the most, and they're the ones who have to deal with this the hardest. So it's unfortunate. I just, you know, obviously raising interest rates continues to slow things down, but it slows things down across an entire spectrum as opposed to really focusing on the things that may be causing inflation. So I just have to point that out. But here we are, on to the next week.
Much appreciated. Thanks as always for tuning in, enjoying the episode, and we will see you again next week. Have a great weekend. Bye.
That wraps up this edition of the Vancouver Life Podcast.
For more information on this podcast and to access a ton of free downloads, investment opportunities, current market info, and homes for sale, you can find it all at www.thevancouverlife.com.
Thanks, and we look forward to bringing you more podcasts about Vancouver real estate.